views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, it is that time of the week again, everybody. It is the best Tuesday you've had all week, and it is time for the True Wealth Radio Show. I am hosting the True Wealth Show. With me in studio,
Matt Dixon.
Barely.
Yep. Barely. I was barely here last week, barely here this week.
Yeah. So we all need to, like, send those positive vibes and the thoughts and the prayers and stuff for Matt so that he's going to make it. Because I think what it is, Matt, you're so tall, your poor heart has to work so hard to pump blood all the way up there.
That's right.
It's just, I don't know.
Yep. There is a nasty bug going around there. It is. It's rough.
Child's play.
Yep.
Yep. That's what we do. We laugh in the face of nasty
bugs.
But
that's what cough drops are for.
Yes. So what we'll try not to do is tell a joke that gets Matt to inhale quickly, because he'll really like...
Yeah.
Oh,
if I cough on air. Yep.
Yeah. So, well, look, you know what? There we go. Off to the races again with the markets, Matt. And
it's been a historic run.
It has been. This is not, there's no such thing as I told you so in this one, but I do think we talked a little bit about, certainly within our firm, about the idea that we thought there could be a strong Q4. And then maybe a little bit of a give back in Q1,
mm-hmm.
right? And that would be pretty typical. And it was more like, hey, the election's over, we can pick a policy pathway, as opposed to, hey, one outcome over another really does stuff. But who knows, right? We don't live in a multiverse where we can see all the outcomes.
Well, some of us don't live in a multiverse.
I don't live in a multiverse. I'm just a, you know, what do you call it? I'm just an RPC. Is that the...
Nerd speak, yeah, for it.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Just a role player character. I don't have I'm not in this plot line. Whatever. No, it's NPC, right? A non player controlled.
That Doesn't sounds matter. Right. That sounds right.
Yeah. So, so whatever. You know, kids and their language. It's video game speak, which I don't speak well. So, we got to thinking, Matt.
Yeah.
What if you had to kind of suss out what you think is driving stuff right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this theory that the markets are constantly pricing in new information.
Right.
What do you think the markets have been pricing in given the recent behavior?
I think there's just so much optimism right now in the marketplace. And it's like, well, I think we're seeing a lot of retail investors in the space. I think a lot of the institutions are kind of following that. A lot of new money coming into the markets and saying, hey, well, if we're going to get cheap oil, maybe that stimulates the economy. And I think that's been some of it. The retail investor just being optimistic. And why would the big institutions be mass selling if the markets are going to continue to kind of plod higher?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that some of what the market appears to be digesting, it's, well, obviously we're behind, the election's behind us, but we keep hearing about new appointees to new positions.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that the markets are particularly interested in the Treasury Secretary nomination right now.
Yeah.
Scott Bessent, right?
Who's was a big hedge fund
manager. Yeah, hedge fund guy. And, but, you know, a very capital market friendly guy who's kind of come out in favor of making permanent tax cuts, making sure that the U.S. dollar stays a reserve currency. He's in favor of things like some of the tariffs in order to sort of level economic playing fields. So
right.
Just a lot of, I think, pro-business ideas.
I saw something interesting in the bond market. So you just mentioned these tax cuts becoming permanent, right? So we saw those come into effect back in 2017. Now they're talking about making that, you know, a more permanent deal.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually seen the bond market react to that, and the U.S. Treasury has gone up about 70 basis points since the news of Trump taking office.
Okay.
And so what that really means for the person that's listening, they're like, what are you talking about, Matt? So we've witnessed that 10-year treasury yield. So how much you would be expected to get if you were to loan the government your money. Investors aren't willing to lock up their money at, like, say, 4.3%. And so they had to raise it to get people interested. Why? Because if taxes or if tariffs come into play and tax cuts become permanent, you would expect that to cause some inflation. And with inflation, rates have to raise, right?
Yeah. So, and it's funny. So let's play the economic game for a second, because there's this description of, well, there's inflation, so rates have to raise.
Mm-hmm.
Or are rates raising because of inflation? Okay. And it's the chicken or egg conversation. It goes something along the lines of what you've just described. I just
right.
want to give our listeners a little bit of additional context to what we're talking about here, right? If the market anticipates that there will be inflation,
mm-hmm.
okay, then investors are unwilling to tie up money for low interest rates.
Correct.
Because they're not able to protect future purchasing power. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does this get resolved? Well, a lot of people think, well, then the market raises interest rates. So actually, the market doesn't raise rates per se. Investors stop buying the low rates.
Right.
And what happens is, this is probably a really good time to revisit the way bonds operate. Okay. So let's play a little illustration game for our listeners, Matt. Let's pretend
yeah.
that you're going to buy a car for me and I'm a car dealership.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you have great credit and you come to me and you want to borrow money to purchase a car. And so I say to you, sure, here's your loan, right? And here's favorable terms because you're a great borrowing risk. If you came along and you were terrible borrowing risk, though, like you have terrible credit and you've had some defaults and it's pretty iffy, then if I was willing to give you a loan, are you going to have a higher rate or a lower rate?
You're going to charge me a lot because I don't have a good track record.
Right. Yeah. You are a high risk, and I need to try to recover money from you as quickly as possible to limit the amount of time
right.
that I am exposed to that risk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So now let's pretend that we're a bond investor. If I am a bond investor is actually loaning money to the bond, right?
Yeah.
Like if you think about the government, when they issue a bond, what they're really saying is, hey, for the next 10 years, can I borrow money, pay
mm-hmm.
you interest, and I'll pay you back a balloon payment at the end of 10 years?
Yeah.
And if you as an investor say, hey, it's not so much that the government's the bad risk. We're not worried about that. But it's the risk that I get paid back with dollars that are less strong than today. It's pretty high. I'm not willing to buy this thing from you. And so then what happens is the market itself reprices and says, oh, well, that bond was a $1,000 bond and it yielded 4%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, nobody was willing to buy it. Well, now the price dropped to $950. And at $950, the yield actually is the same. The $1,000 was going to pay you $400, you know, or $40 a year. That was
right.
It's not going to change, right?
But
now $950 yeah. will pay you $40 a year.
Right.
The
so
coupon's
you didn't
the same. You're buying at a discount. What happens to the equivalent yield?
It goes up.
Yeah. The yield is higher. $40 yeah. on a $950 principal is a higher percentage yield than $40 on a $1,000 a principal.
Right.
So if the market is unwilling to pay face value, it will pay less. If it pays less, then the fixed rate of return of that bond looks better.
Mm-hmm.
In effect, the rate goes up because the price people are willing to pay for the bonds goes down. Now, once the market sees this, the new issue bonds adjust price.
Right. right.
The bonds that come to market say, well, we can't incentivize anybody with the rate that low. We're going to have to print bonds at this higher rate.
Mm-hmm.
And then people may be willing to come and pay face value because now face value on the new bonds is issued higher. This is also why treasuries aren't the same interest all the time. Depending on when you bought them and when they were issued, the rates change according to market conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a primer for the way interest rates sort of operate. And the market sets those rates by people's willingness to purchase, right? If everybody wants to buy bonds, guess what happens? Bidding war, the price of the bond goes up, yields drop.
Right.
But if nobody's willing to buy, then what happens? The opposite of a bidding war, right? It's a liquidation event. Oh, nobody wants to buy my house. I better lower the price.
Yeah, and that's what we just witnessed. No one wanted to buy these bonds at...
Nobody's willing to lock their rates in that high, nope. So the market has to discount.
Yeah.
And all it's really doing is saying the market is not willing to take risks that long. Now, the reality is the market's very complex, right? Because lots of companies need to hedge risks. So somebody, you know, a life insurance company says, oh, for the next 10 years, Matt, you bought 10-year term life insurance. For the next 10 years, we got the chance that you die and we got to pay out.
Mm-hmm.
We need to hedge that some way. Okay, so we have the premiums you're paying us, but we also have to put money aside from everybody else and make sure we got enough assets to cover in the event something happens to you.
Right.
Well, that's a 10-year long commitment if you keep paying.
Mm-hmm.
Mortgages, maybe 30 years, right? So there's lots of reasons that institutions buy bonds for different durations to hedge risk, but that's all part of market demand.
Yeah.
Right? And we see it really simply in mortgages. Like, why did mortgage rates go up even though the 10-year treasury, I mean, they went up more.
Right, because rates were coming down and mortgage rates were going up. And we looked at that and we're like,
and you thought, why? Well, it has a...
Just demand. Everyone still is buying homes.
Well, or fewer people buying, like the secondary market's not paying as much for the mortgages, right? So they have to raise the rates to sell the mortgages.
Just to get someone to buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, the new issues have to adjust to market demand. And the reality is that there's probably higher risk of default in mortgages than there have been in a lot of years. I don't think it's anything like 2008, but it's higher because we're reaching the structural limits of the market. Now, what do I mean when I say structural limits?
I'm not sure what you mean by this.
Well, so here's the simple answer, right? It's a mechanical issue, right? Oh, people only make so much money per hour, and they can only pay this much for a mortgage, period.
Oh.
Right? They cannot manufacture more money, and they can't access it through borrowing. So this is as much money as they can access. It's a mechanical limitation. And
gotcha.
We are seeing that capitation in housing prices is you just don't have more people showing up with more money to drive the price higher,
mm-hmm.
especially with rates higher because the cost of capital is higher now.
Yeah.
Right? So cost of capital is really meaningful. But in the context of what we're talking about today, there's still more to it. Like you would think if the cost of capital was higher, the markets would be lower, but that's not what we're seeing. So what else could be at play?
Mm-mm.
Well, I'm certainly glad you asked that question,
yes,
Matt.
Yes, I would love to know.
Good. Stick around because we're going to unpack more of that. But we got to grab our next break here. So when we come back, we'll talk about, yeah, what are some of the additional factors that may be making the market more optimistic in spite of the higher cost of capital.
Do you want to give people a hint?
You're welcome to.
How about maybe looking at Social Security benefits and what might be changing there?
We shall see. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. I am hosting today with...
The leper.
No,
he's
it's
over
not
here.
That bad. I'm just going to start announcing you anyway. He's like, don't even make me talk. You'll be fine, Matt.
I'm working
put some
through
dirt
it.
On it.
That's right.
This is exactly why I think... Western hygiene is slightly overrated because we just don't pummel our immune systems enough to really make them work.
Yeah, we need to drink that water that's got all the stuff in it to...
I don't know that we need GI stuff,
yeah.
But I'm just like, golly, everybody that's, I have a sniffle or a hangnail or something. I need a week off. And I'm like, toughen up, you pansy. Golly. So, let's hope that we never have an actual hardship.
Right.
You know, I got to tell you, I feel pretty soft.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no. We have conversations about things like, I kind of want to buy a generator for my house. Because when the power goes down, it's just too much to be camping for an hour or two.
Right.
Like, wow, you are just soft. when I was a kid, I thought power outages were awesome because it was like, oh, it's camping time. Right. Now as an adult, I'm like, this is so inconvenient.
You're like, you took away my Netflix.
And it's really ironic because, like, you know, a hike up in the woods on purpose.
To get away from it all.
Right. And, you know, like, just carry, you know, a flashlight and not much else and be like, all right, well, here we go, right?
Be interesting to know how many people, like, couldn't make it 3 days without electricity. Like, that's the scary thing. Like, what happens, you know?
We did it for a week during Snowmageddon back in 2019. Feels like a long time ago, and it in some ways it just happened, but in other ways, man, that felt like a long time ago.
Yeah,
what an adventure. Anyway, look, we were talking about at the break, and get caught up on the podcast. You can always come back to this, and if you're just listening on the podcast for the first time, let me try not to drop the ball, and we'll pick up where we left off, which is that we talked about the rising cost of capital.
Yep.
Okay, meaning interest rates are going up. Okay, it's more expensive to borrow money. And yet the markets have sort of been going up regardless. So what else could be at play?
Yeah. So
you hinted not so subtly at a couple things on the table. Talk to me, Matt.
Yeah. I mean, there's been talks about eliminating the taxes, on Social Security benefits.
Yeah. Which,
and tips.
In Oregon, they don't tax Social Security, but the feds do.
The feds love to tax stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, that really would change things. Frees up so much extra spending for that generation that's in retirement.
Yep.
And, not taxing tips or overtime pay, that also incentivizes people to work more, right?
It really does.
Like, if I know that overtime isn't going to be taxed, maybe I'm going to go put in more hours. That means more GDP for the economy, right?
Yes. Yeah, and I can see that as not crazy, right?
Yeah, absolutely not. That makes sense.
Now, I want to just take a side note here. It's not really in our show notes, but to talk about a concept that everybody would do well to just understand this one. And it's fairly easy to remember. There's a concept in economics known as the Laffer curve.
Okay.
It sounds like Laffer, like, aha, like that's a funny joke. Ha ha. No, not that kind. Laffer is the name of the individual that came up with it. But the Laffer curve is the concept that there's a maximum amount of revenue that you can collect in taxes. Right. And so if the tax rate is set too high, it will actually reduce the output of the economy and it will reduce the total net recovery in tax, right? If you lower taxes and accelerate the economy, it's possible to lower the tax rate, but through economic growth, actually capture more in net tax revenue. Mm-hmm. And what the government is attempting to do, and what policy decision is attempting to do, is hit the sweet spot of what's the maximum collectible revenue you can get through the combination of behaviors, okay? Whether it's lower taxes or economic incentives and so forth. And so it's interesting to see the proposal of not taxing overtime pay in particular. Tips, a certain amount, probably go untaxable anyway because it's a cash transaction in many cases.
Yeah.
But for the tips that are reported on credit cards and so forth, that would be meaningful to make. And it would also save on administration to just say, well, we're just not going to worry about those.
Right.
Right. But the overtime pay is an interesting incentive concept.
What makes that one more interesting to you?
Well, that there's a culture that's sort of shifted all over the board, right? It used to be that there are certain people that it's a bragging right to work a lot of hours, okay? And then for other people, it's they don't want to work at all, right? Yeah. So there's a whole spectrum in there. But to make a sort of cultural nod towards saying, we not only value hard work, but we reward it in the tax system.
Right.
Right. That's an interesting statement because you have a lot of talk about like how the European economies, there's a shorter work week, there's earlier retirement, there's more social programs, but there's a generally higher tax base.
Yeah.
And so that is not the same value proposition as what we're seeing in a scenario where, oh, well, it's just lower taxes and incentivize even more work.
Right.
Now, I will say, just because we incentivize more work doesn't necessarily guarantee additional productivity. Okay. And that's because a lot of studies will show that there's a lot of wasted time in a worker's day. Like, we're just not terribly efficient. The average worker probably wastes 20 to 30% of their time or more. I don't have a study in front of me, but anecdotally, that would totally make sense that, you know, just in the And I'm not saying it's bad either, but like we just don't work all the time when we're somewhere. There's a lot of sort of, you know, transition time and conversational stuff and just stuff lost in the shuffle where it's like, well, it's you've seen like, oh, vacation starts tomorrow. I got to cram hard to get everything done today. It's like, oh, you just hit your productivity swing right there. Compare your productive output to that. And it's like, well, most of the time I'm running at 40% of that.
Yeah.
Okie doke. So anyway, that's interesting. There's other stuff on the table.
Like too. What?
Well, this is back to the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, that was nominated.
Yeah.
He really would like to see the current tax rate that we're – the taxed scenario that we're in was temporary, right? Because they didn't have enough votes in the last Trump presidency to make it permanent, so it was sort of a – test case for a while. We suggested making the current tax scenario permanent and even potentially lowering corporate tax rates if possible. The current corporate tax rate would stay at 21% rather than bouncing back up to, I think, 28%.
Wow.
It would continue to maintain the higher standard deduction levels that we currently have. Recall that there used to be lower standard deduction thresholds five or 6 years ago, right? And those were increased significantly. There was some griping because people lost the itemized deductions, but they got a much higher standard deduction instead. So it was sort of just a reimagining how the taxes were calculated. And so that would likely stick around. And then there's even been some other discussion around, you know, additional tax credits and so forth that might be incentives for children and that kind of thing.
Would you say that if that corporate tax remains lower, that kind of encourages like corporations to invest more if they know that their effective tax rate is lower?
I think what it does is it can keep more production domestic.
Yeah.
Right? But that's not the whole story. But, you know, keep in mind, too, corporations, like we tend to think of megacorps when you say corporation.
Yeah.
You know, small businesses are corporations, too.
Sure.
I think if you want to encourage companies to operate in America, you have to have a favorable tax environment. And then you have to have a favorable labor environment. And it's both, you know, which is a relevant discussion here because there's some discussion about tariffs, right? That's a big component in the conversation now. And what does a tariff do for a corporate, like a megacorp? Like what do you, if you're a megacorp, how do you view tariffs?
Oh, you don't like it because you want to get your product as cheap as you can. And if you have to go overseas, so be it, right? Because it's your bottom line. And if there's tariffs involved, now everything gets more expensive if you're going to, you know, take stuff overseas. And
exactly.
So... yeah, I mean, you'd rather not have the tariffs, but for, you know, the company that is smaller, it might not play as big of a role because, you know, you're probably not outsourcing a ton of your stuff to another country.
Yeah. Here's the interesting thing about where this sort of shows up in the marketplace. And I'm going to couch this carefully because we always have to say that, you know, we can't give investment advice on the show. As professional advisors, you need to come see us directly for advice, right? We're just talking education stuff. Have you paid attention to the small and mid-cap indexes much recently?
I thought they had a pretty big rally.
Yes, right?
Yeah.
This actually aligns with what you're talking about.
Okay.
If we consider that the mega corporations are now looking at, one, a higher cost of capital.
Right.
Okay. And two, tariffs, which would suggest that their labor costs are going to be altered because many of these companies have labor outsourced to other economies outside the United States where labor's cheaper.
Yeah, I think of Apple as a perfect example. Yeah. Huge company. All the phones are made in China. Tariffs, that would probably spell higher costs.
It would either be a really hard chop to margins, right, which would impact profitability, or it would suggest higher prices to the customer,
right?
Or a combination of both is more likely, right? why are the small and the mid caps rallying in this scenario?
They're probably just not nearly as reliant on everything that they're doing being offshore, right? Like that company.
It's the domestically domiciled companies that stand to benefit from a permanent reduction in tax rates and tariffs, which improves their economic moat, right? Mm-hmm. It keeps their competition out or prices their competition higher, which would be a net benefit to them.
Yeah.
Okay. And so I think that that is an interesting consideration in the policy pictures. We look at it and say, well, okay, cheap energy. Okay. Now, this conversation, by the way, I want you to put a pin in it. I want to come back to the cheap energy concept in a minute.
All right.
But, you know, cheap energy benefits everybody domestically. Mm-hmm. Okay. It benefits consumers. It benefits companies. In theory, that should be deflationary because it's a primary input cost. If you lower primary input, it should be deflationary in nature. If it's not deflationary, it should improve margins, which would drive up the price of things, right? Because improved profitability on lower input costs means better margins if the final output cost doesn't drop.
Yeah.
So, okay, then, you know, the margin either goes into labor or it just goes into corporate profits, okay? Which still gets taxed, but not as high a rate. And so, again, there's a frame up for this, right? Every company basically has a partner in the government, whether they like it or not, and that partner is going to get a portion of the action. The question is going to be how much, right? And so if you look at how many different partners they have, oh, are partners overseas or not? And which government piece do I have to pay you this time? You start to get a picture of this, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, I want to talk about energy. I'm looking at the clock, though, and I realize we're at a point where we got to take another break.
Okay.
So we'll do that. When we come back, I'm going to talk – we will. We'll talk about – the idea of cheaper energy, and I want to also have a little bit of a conversation, just a hint, at how this connects to green energy. And it's not as crazy as you think. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, everybody. And yeah, we are live again.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, and from our favorite sales exec here at Brooks Communication, right? So Amber, good to see you and happy Thanksgiving.
I love you guys.
All right, it's an official shout out. She loves you, and we all love you back. All right, crew. So we were talking about all the good times with cheap energy.
Yep.
Okay. I put a pin in this for a reason. Okay. So first, Matt, I prepped you for this. Don't screw it up.
I'm ready.
All right. How do you get cheap energy?
Can I just say drill, baby, drill?
You can.
Yeah, you can. Oh, God. But turn that pipeline back on.
Yes. By the way, his impressions keep getting better. So
the voice wasn't so raspy, I'd really go on a spree
for
you.
He wouldn't go for it.
Yep.
So first, though, is Trump a big oil guy?
I think he just wants things to move cheaply.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. If it's coal, it's coal. If it's, you know, getting diesel in trucks that's cheap, put the diesel in the trucks. If it's liquid natural gas, I don't think he cares. He's the type of guy that just wants to solve the problem.
And what I don't know how farsighted he is, but here's my sense of things, okay? I got another one for you.
Okay.
Okay. Elon Musk.
Yes.
Is sort of roped into the Trump administration right now.
He is.
For whatever
heavy
reason,
yep.
This the kind of an unusual dynamic there.
And we all know Elon,
Well, is he a big oil guy?
No.
No. And here's, I have to remind people, right? Up until the time that Elon bought Twitter, he was a darling of the other side of the aisle, right? Yep. Like, he's kind of become a darling of the right, lately because of being a free speech advocate, but he'd been a real darling of the left in terms of sort of the environmental efforts that he had, was going through. And I think in the end of the day, Elon has got a vision of transitioning to electric vehicles for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is he owns a company that sells electric vehicles.
Yeah.
So it's profitable for him to do that, right? And that also funds his other exotic ideas, like I need a spaceship to go to Mars. It's like, okay, that's a thing for him. So
here's the wild thing when you really think about that. If he can actually get these batteries to advance where they're not so dependent on lithium, right?
Yeah.
And they're easier to recycle. It's like, okay, now you've really figured it out.
Yeah. All right, let's just unpack all this because I gave Matt like an earful at the break. So I'm like, we got to talk about all this stuff, right? Okay, first, here's my take on this. Trump wants cheap energy.
Yep.
Now.
Yep.
Okay, now. And what's the fastest way to get it now? Drill, baby, drill.
Yeah, it's oil. Okay.
But he's got Elon Musk in the ecosystem now who's going to say also, you know, we could solve this through green energy too. Here's where it's different than I feel like it's been maybe in previous administrations. It's not an either or. I don't think Trump's a big oil guy.
Yeah.
I think he's a cheap oil guy. But he's also a good. Now that buys us time to put in place other alternative renewable clean energy sources. Because I don't think Trump's anti-environment.
No.
Despite what people might think, it's like just because you're pro cheap energy doesn't mean you're pro like killing all the endangered species.
Right.
I don't think that's what's going on. So it's a get the cheap energy, use that so that we can fund investment in renewable energy and make sure that the price point makes sense, right? Because despite what everybody wants to believe right now, it does not yet make sense to try to make everything solar, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Can't produce enough of it fast enough and get it where it needs to be. The grid can't handle it. The grid needs to be upgraded and hardened and, you know, EMP resistant and a number of other things. It's a massive undertaking that will be both time and money. But a cheap energy economy generates more revenue, which gives the ability to invest in that sort of stuff.
True.
So one of the criticisms of the current Trump policies, and if you're starting to think that maybe Matt and I are relatively on board with some of the Trump policy, probably because we are.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it here. It's not about politics in this case. It's about policy and the idea that, yes, we should be moving toward renewable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The same way I am an environmentalist, but I'm not a preservationist. I'm a conservationist. They're different.
Yes.
Right. One of them, you can go into that environment and enjoy it. The other one, you get kicked out.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't believe in this idea of like, oh, nature doesn't, we can't have it. You have to stay out forever. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, you got to learn how to like
take care of it, you know?
Yep.
So anyhow, in the environment where you speed up economic growth, you incentivize work, and you incentivize the kinds of things that would improve our grid, because like the reality is we're gonna need to upgrade the power grids because it's militarily vulnerable.
Well, and there's more and more need for power. Just look at California.
Well, there's more and more need for electricity in the right places at the right times,
mm-hmm.
right? California, self-inflicted wounds, right? When you say, great, no cars that take gasoline, you're like, well, okay, how are you gonna pull that off? And the answer is unicorns, right? Like, yeah, we can't even do it. But if we said, all right, well, let's do the best we can. And when we finally get there and realize we failed, the question is, how close did we get? And what if we just move the finish line a little further down the road and keep trying?
Yeah.
Right? You know, how do you get the ball rolling? Somebody's got to push really hard at first. And so California goes out, and I'm not saying I like it, by the way. I'm not advocating for this. I'm actually advocating for much clearer communication with like voters and saying maybe for a change we could say it to everybody. All right, just so we're clear, some of you are legitimately stupid, right? Even you guys, our listeners are smart because the people that are idiots stopped listening, right? But some people out there, you are legitimately stupid. Doesn't mean you're not lovable. Doesn't mean you're not valuable. But you're just too dumb to see this. But for the rest of you, I got an idea. Maybe we put a little bit of an investment into this thing. And it yields more than we put into it, and it's worth it, right? You guys that can't see past your next meal, not because you're, you know, like, because literally that's all you think about. It's like, well, I had lunch, and I got to plan dinner. Like, what about breakfast tomorrow? No, we got to get through dinner first. It's like, okay, well, you're going to shop before every meal. You'll spend a lot of time and never make significant progress because you can't plan that far out.
Yeah.
Okay? I can't help you that much if that's where you're at. But if you're capable of buying a week's worth of groceries at a time, we could have a little conversation about planning. Okay.
I love that.
Yeah, I'm snarky. This is why it'd be hard to elect. It's like, he's a little bit brutally honest here. Although maybe folks are coming around to that.
I think we're there.
We're coming around to it. It's like, Well, have we thought about being less stupid?
Right.
That sounds very elitist of you. It's like, okay, well, let me explain why I think it's stupid. Do you still agree or disagree? Well, I mean, I agree with you. Does that make me elitist, or did it just mean I knew things? That's the real key, is can you ever be wrong? God, if we could ever get to a point where we allow our leaders to be wrong and to learn and to grow.
Right.
Man, would that be an amazing world where somebody could walk up in leadership and go, yeah, it turns out I kind of blew that one, but I learned a whole lot, and I'm not going to try to do it that way again next time.
Yeah, the other thing politicians are never allowed to do is, like, have a change of mind, right? Where it's like, well, I used to kind of believe that, and yeah, I voted that way. Well, things have changed, and now this is my new kind of belief set.
I'd have to be a different kind. Say it like it could even happen. First of all, like, right? Who would want that job? Really? You want to show up just to have people throw rocks at you, and then when you get there, you can really do very little?
Yeah, it doesn't sound that great.
It doesn't. But, you know, communicating ideas to people, that's the magic. So, you know, speaking of, as we get to this, bottom line is that I'm not that concerned that we're going to run the vehicle off the road in the Trump economy. Here's my favorite, though. Let's talk about this one for just a second.
Okay.
The projections for the deficit spending. Have you seen some of these projections where the Congressional Budget Office says, like, oh, it's going to cause, you know, umpteen trillion dollars. It says over the next 10 years, it's going to add $1.9 trillion to the national debt.
Yeah.
Have you seen this?
Well, no, I haven't seen that one. The only one I've seen is Trump's new proposal to rein the budget in, and that's what Ramaswamy and Elon have been appointed to do, is to
Doge.
To gut 33% of the government's expenditures in the first year. So
yes,
that all right. is something
so
that
this
I look
will be
at.
Fun. Let's
like,
we got to talk about this for a second. I'm looking at the clock. If we take our break now,
yeah,
we can do this, and
are
we'll
we
have like 10 minutes to just.
How do you like, gut 33%?
Oh, there's ways.
Oh, yeah?
So many ways, yeah.
Do you get a knife and I get a knife and we just start hacking this thing up?
Well, so I actually went through Ramaswamy's book.
Oh,
Truth.
You did?
Interesting book. Yeah, I could give like a quick recap on it too. Let's do this. Let's grab our last break.
All right.
So when we come back, we'll talk about Doge. First, why is Doge funny, right?
Okay.
And then what does it stand for? What's the mission and what might it mean for
and
us
then we'll
as
wield
taxpayers?
Some knives. Okay.
All right, stick around. We'll be right back. I am Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Show. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn, joined in studio today by
Matt Dixon. Oh.
Right? Now I want to do it like...
try again. I want
Matt Damon. No, Matt Dixon, welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Hey, so welcome. Yeah, like, no, welcome back, listeners. Home stretch, we've been talking a lot about how the markets have been going up, kind of in spite of the increasing cost of capital. A lot of it appears to be around anticipation of potential economic growth stimulated by some of the potential tax policy and so forth.
Yep.
And then there's a whole lot of griping. Much of it, I wish I could say, was nonpartisan, but it seems like you always get one team or the other saying why it's a terrible idea or a good idea.
Yeah,
and we're just trying to like scrap the idea of partisanship. It's hard, I get it, but if we're to just look at this and say, well, economically speaking, this is the stuff that can potentially benefit. you know, lower taxes generally keeps more money in people's pockets. That's more discretion for consumers. Tariffs do potentially impact the price of goods and services. It could be inflationary in nature, but it also could mean that the wage earner is more protected, and that it could create more because there may be, it could be a number of things. It's interesting because it's like, well, if you force jobs back into the country, you have more jobs, but you have the same number of workers. That means employers have to compete more to attract employees, so wages could go up. And so there could be some counterbalancing effects to this, right?
Yep.
I don't think that's as interesting as what we really want to talk about.
What do we want to talk about?
Doge.
Yeah?
Doge, right? Why Doge? You guys remember when back in 2017, 2016, Bitcoin was going bananas and it's just starting to get a lot of PR. Back then, Bitcoin was $17,000. Today, it's, you know, somewhere in the 80s, I think. 80,000s, that is. So
right.
It's gone up by, what, 400+%? And everybody goes, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And I say, yeah, go look at NVIDIA. Let me know which we'd rather own, Bitcoin or NVIDIA, over the same time frame.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not a recommendation either. It's just an acknowledgement. Lots of things have gone up a lot. Okay.
It's true.
Even Tesla.
Yeah.
You know, you could have bought stocks that would have outperformed Bitcoin. So don't forget that. All right. Nevertheless, Elon Musk comes along and it sort of endorses or flirts with what had been considered kind of a side scenario of something called, I think it was actually pronounced originally Doggy Coin. But people started calling it Dogecoin, like D-O-G-G-E or D-O-G-E. And that became kind of a thing where Elon endorses it, and all of a sudden the currency pops up in value a ton.
Right.
Right. He tweets about it, and it just goes bananas in value, creates millionaires, all that. Well, along comes the Department of Government Efficiency, which is Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk partnering together to slash and burn government bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Matt, you at the break were telling me something I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, their plan within a year is, well, and I think they have until
18 months. They want to be done
months.
By
June of 2025.
I think July 4 of 2026, because that's the 250-year anniversary of the country.
Oh, okay.
So I think they had 18 months to try to get through this whole
thing. Yeah, clean this thing up. And they want to cut government's budget by about a third. Yeah.
And they're planning on eliminating entire departments potentially.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Entire agencies gone.
Yep.
Okay. And a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, what about you can't? It may be the only path. Right?
Yeah.
Because there's a bunch of legislative stuff in place. And this is going to plug right into what you said at the break, Matt. There's a bunch of things that are sort of on the books legislatively or legally that protect certain people from being fired, mm-hmm. right? And it's because you don't want to have executives with unfettered authority to just do whatever they want.
Right.
Okay? So certain positions, you can't remove them. The problem is you also, once they're in there, like, well, how do you get them out? If they're unfireable from certain protection and you can't, then the only thing that you can do is eliminate the position. Right?
Right.
So it's like a hard reset. You go, okay, well, if you can't fire people and they're doing things that are non-compliant or combative with policy design, because that's effectively what you have. Some people would call this the deep state, by the way.
Yeah.
But the deep state would be the bureaucracy, like the paperwork and the personnel that are implementing policy. Right? So it's not just that Congress makes a law and then the president passes it. But then the agencies responsible for fulfilling the law determine the policies and procedures for how it happens. And they can get abusive with that power.
Absolutely.
And so there's this idea that we should go in and just wholesale eliminate entire organizations within government, and they'll be gone, and we'll have to figure it out, or it'll go back to the states or somewhere else to deal with. But it gives us an opportunity for a clean slate restart.
It makes sense, though, because when you look at where is all of the money in Washington, D.C. and the surrounding areas, it's all
lobbyists and lawyers.
Yeah. I mean, it's the lawyers, right? And you write all of these bills and you write all of this legislative procedure. There's a lot of lawyers involved in that, and the money ends up in their hands.
Well, and I hate to say it, but in many cases, lawyers are not incentivized to solve the problem, but to perpetuate it.
Yeah, to extrapolate it out so that they make more money.
Yeah.
And so it's like, why is everything so expensive? Because a lawyer's involved in making it happen.
Yeah. So
that's just the reality.
And
of,
so it's, I think it's not so much that anybody likes the idea of wholesale slashing and burning and having jobs gone and lives disrupted, but there doesn't seem to be another path. And when you make people angry enough, then they'll do things like that.
With less departments and less big government comes less need for all of the attorneys that are in all of the legal system that you're having to create in order to navigate those waters. So you want to drain the swamp. That's how you do it. You reduce the size of the swamp.
Well, and I would say in this case, it may not be even the swamp. It's like, do you just dig up the weed at the root?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, if you want to plant a garden, sometimes you got to take the weeds out first.
Yeah.
And that it's a rough one here. It's going to be controversial.
Well, I mean, but think about, I mean, I'm going to probably tick a lot of people off when I say this, but like Department of Education.
It's brought up for a lot of good reasons.
You know what I mean? It's like, what are you guys really doing? Yeah, you set your standards. And this is coming from someone who was a teacher for 8 years. I'm like, you guys push all this stuff down the line, but is it really improving the outcome?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, there's just a lot where you go, hey, even if you asked an organization to change, there's no way to compel the change. So it's like, okay, well, then we'll just reboot.
Yep.
Right? Sometimes that's the solution. Turn it off and back on again.
Or just turn it off and leave it off.
We shall see, right? At any rate, I'm looking at the clock and we're out of time for the day. So it's been a fun conversation about what's driving the markets higher. If you are looking for personalized financial advice, Matt, how do they reach us?
Yeah, give us a phone call at 541-375-0898, or you can text that number, or just go on our website, littlejohnfs.com.
That's it. And so lots of ways to reach us. And again, there's no obligation for this kind of stuff, so we are happy to just give you a second opinion. But as far as today goes, we are out of time. So this is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And we are signing off. You've been listening to The True Well Show on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.